Welcome to the Politocrat. I am Omar Moore. It is Saturday, June 19th, 2021. On this edition of the Politocrat, Juneteenth, a federal holiday in the United States of America, the first new federal holiday, and it is a momentous one, but it's also more than a holiday itself. Juneteenth and the history coming up next.
Heavenly Father, to ask your blessing on all of
us. Amen.
So that if tomorrow is our great getting up morning,
amen.
If tomorrow we have to meet the judgment day, Heavenly Father, we want you to let our folks know that we died facing the enemy. We want them to know that we went down standing up.
Yes, Lord.
Amongst those that are fighting against our oppression. We want them to know, Heavenly Father, that we died for freedom. We ask these blessings in Jesus' name. Amen.
That was a clip from the Edward Zwick film Glory from 1989. Morgan Freeman's voice there as he is talking about the sacrifices as a Civil War Union soldier from the 54th Massachusetts Regiment. That was the all-black regiment in Massachusetts. And the film chronicled that regiment. And that was a moment where the members of that regiment were testifying and giving praise to the ancestors and also acknowledging the struggles, because it has and continues to be a struggle here in these United States as black people continue to fight for their liberation and their freedom. And on June the 19th, 1865, Union Major General Gordon Granger came to Galveston, Texas, and announced that every black person who is enslaved, that would be all black people in Texas, were free. That was the order, General Order Number 3, that told enslaved people, black people in Texas, that they were free. Now, this order came some 2.5 years after President Abraham Lincoln had issued the Emancipation Proclamation, which became effective actually on the 1st of January 1863, some 2.5 years earlier. Now, slavery continued to exist, the enslavement continued to exist in the United States after that proclamation, and it continued to exist after Juneteenth. However, there were people in Galveston, Texas, and beyond in the state of Texas in general who were not free and who did start to gain freedom, but not everybody was freed on Juneteenth of 1865 in Texas. It was the beginning of the freedom of the black people who had been in bondage. And this was a significant thing, and it's a significant thing because, A, on the one hand, freedom had finally come. On the second hand, it had been denied them, them meaning black people, for 2.5 years, black people were kept in the dark. And kept in the dark by the enslavers. And this was something that the enslavers and the Confederates, that's what they are. They were the enslavers. These are the people who wanted to keep enslavement going. And the Union, as we know, were not so gung-ho, if you will, about getting enslavement eradicated. President Lincoln had other priorities. Remember that initially he did. And he has given, and if you look back at the history, gave a number of speeches in which he outlined that. I would urge people at this point to read A People's History of the United States by Howard Zinn, Zinn. And you can get to know about some of those speeches that Abraham Lincoln gave when he really did not care too much about enslavement being ended. He was much more concerned about the Union and the country. And there are lots of speeches, or a number of speeches, in which he has outlined this and said some racist things as well. Abraham Lincoln certainly must be remembered, and all of the history of Lincoln must be remembered. But on this day, on this particular day, where we are now almost 150 years later, this day is a day of significance. This day is a day of emancipation. And it just begins because, as I have said, and said yesterday, there were still many black people around the country who had still been enslaved and not been freed. Enslavement continued in a number of places around the country even after Juneteenth, 1865. That is very important to keep in mind. It's very important to educate people on that. And it's very important that you read up on it in detail so that you really do understand. So that when people start talking and telling you, oh, no, every black person was freed, that's not true. They were not all freed. We were not all freed on Juneteenth. It was the beginning. The beginning. And the 13th Amendment was not ratified until the following December, another 6 months after Juneteenth, 1865. So it's critically important that people are aware of that. And even after the ratification, there was enslavement that continued in various parts of the United States. That is the full picture of Juneteenth, the aftermath of Juneteenth, and the aftermath of the ratification of the 13th Amendment of the Constitution of the United States of America. Juneteenth is a very important day. Black people fought and died for freedom, for liberation. And luta continua. There is still a long way to go in this country. Sure, we are freed in a great many ways. Of course, we aren't walking around in chains, certainly not in any kind of bondage. And we have access and freedom of movement. But in a very real sense, there are reminders, of course, to this very present day that we do not have freedom of movement in many instances. We do not have the freedom to walk down the street. We do not have the freedom in a great many instances as black people to be able to just walk the street or sell water or sleep in our dorm room or birdwatch in Central Park or walk the street with Skittles and iced tea. And you know what I am talking about. Our lives have been ended by people who hate us. And in a great many of those instances I've just mentioned, there was no accountability or any kind of restorative justice. Well, obviously, in some of those cases, you can't restore people's lives that have been taken. And there was no accountability in almost all of those cases I've just mentioned. In fact, nearly, I think, all of them. So in that sense, we are not free. We are not free to walk down the street without a police officer coming up to us and killing us. So when we remember Juneteenth on this holy and sacred day, as far as I'm concerned, on this first edition of the federal holiday, which has just gone into effect, we must remember not only the sacrifices and triumphs and bravery and courage of Black people, we also have to connect that to the present day. As a reminder that although freedom started to happen on Juneteenth of 1865, there are still almost 150 years later, in fact, I'd say more than 150 years later, if I do the math correctly, there are still, in a great many ways, aspects of our lives as Black people where we are not free and we cannot just walk the streets because there are people who would kill us just as soon as look at us right here and right now in 2021 and beyond. We've seen this all over this country, and it is important to connect Juneteenth to June 19th, 2021. And while I think it is important to celebrate, I think it's even more important to educate, to remember, to pass on the knowledge, to study and understand, to connect what happened in 1865 to what's happening now in 2021, voter suppression bills being passed all over the country, Juneteenth not being allowed to be taught in at least 4 states and counting, critical race theory being made a boogeyman in 2021 in 4 states in the country so far and counting. Nothing of the sort of critical race theory is even being taught. There are laws against it in 2021. So freedom of thought is being trampled. Freedom of education as to actual living, breathing history is being attacked and blocked. And if you do not have a strong education system that teaches history, you do not have a free mind. And if you do not have a free mind, you are not a free person or a free soul. So we can celebrate Juneteenth, and I think it is important to do that, to acknowledge our ancestors and their fight for freedom and their bravery and their courage and the victories and the really difficult times and the adverse and violent circumstances of enslavement and the horrors of it. And we also can acknowledge the strength of our ancestors and the wisdom that they passed down to us. But we also have to educate people. We also have to educate ourselves, educate each other, educate our children, educate the next generations. Because with all of the attacks that we are coming under and all of the attacks on education in this country by Republicans, all of the attacks by Republicans on critical race theory, on Black history, which is American history, on enslavement history, the history of enslavement in the United States. With all of that happening, we must proactively educate each other, educate ourselves, and educate our kids and the future generations. Because if we don't do that, you are going to have a country that not only denies its history, which this country has been doing for an awfully long time, but also rewrites its history.
After the end of slavery and white Southerners lost the power that they had over African American people, they unleashed a torrent of violence on the freedmen. And it was something that started as soon as 1865 when they made the announcement. Remember, I told you that people who had been celebrating the announcement of the end of slavery were beaten, were whipped by their former enslavers. And the resentment that people had about this notion of equality, Granger's order mentions the word, suggests that blacks were now going to live on an equal plane with whites. And there were many people who just could not take that after their culture that made slavery a part of their way of life. And so throughout the years, there are other instances, not so dramatic as the Tulsa riot, but situations where black people in a particular town were essentially run out and people took over their land. They look at census records. There were a certain number of black people. You know, one time the census was done and the next time they came back, there were none. Sundown towns, black people had to be indoors by a certain period of time. All of these kinds of things, trying to maintain the kind of control that people had during slavery, but without the actual slave system. So violence was a part of this from 1865 on, when black people ceased to be of financial value to whites, they turned on them.
And that was Annette Gordon Reed, the author and professor. She has written a book called On Juneteenth, Jim Crow and Violence Against the Black Community. This is a book you must read. And what I will be doing at some point not today, because I've got another announcement to make, of course, about books and giveaways. But I will be giving away a copy of that book at some point in the next little while, a few weeks away from now. But you've got to read that book. That's a very important book. And it dovetails with what I've been saying, that we are still, in some ways, not free in this country. Now, obviously, as I said earlier, we are free to move. We are free to walk. We are free to have our businesses and all of those kinds of things. But all of those things are and have been under attack for a long time. We're not getting the kinds of business loans that white people are getting. We're not getting the kinds of startup money that white businesses are getting. We're not getting the kinds of economic help in general that white people are getting. I mean, this is still happening here in 2021 and beyond. This is not something that stopped. And so when people talk about Juneteenth, it is very important to keep in mind what Annette Gordon Reed said in that clip, which is that there were white people, many, who could not deal with the fact that black people were free, that you and I were free, and we could have our own autonomy. Just imagine that. There's someone out there, right now even, who doesn't like the fact that you are a human being and that you are someone who has the right to walk and talk. And they call themselves pro-life. And they're thinking that of you, that they don't like you. And that they don't think you have the right to exist and walk and talk and breathe. And there's so many people like that in this world. And their actions, not what they say, but their actions reflect it. They don't have you as a friend. They don't have you, a number of you, as their friends. They don't invite you to some of the things that you should be invited to. They have all of these, they're going to take over. I've said this before. They do not want us here. And Annette Gordon Reed is basically saying that without saying it in that clip. all the violence that took place after 1865, after June 19th, 1865, all the violence directed at black people by white people, including, of course, the Tulsa race massacre that I've talked about here and that we are now more aware of in the United States, Greenwood, including a number of other events, violent events by white mobs against black people. Rosewood in 1923 in Florida, another black town that was economically vibrant, prosperous, independent, destroyed by white people. And again, the same lie gets told. Oh, well, it was because there was this accusation of a black man attacking a white woman. And again, as I say, these are complete lies. And any excuse is made to justify white violence against black people when, oh, well, it was because of this. And of course, it had nothing to do with anything like that because that was a lie as well. Black person wasn't attacking anybody white. It was the lie that got told. It was the myth that white male Southerners and other white males in the country romanticized and played up. Just like they played it up in the movies, like The Birth of a Nation. Birth of a Nation in 1915 by D.W. Griffith, which played up this racist myth and this terror in white people's minds. Oh my goodness, a black person's going to come and get me. And this is, again, as James Baldwin has talked about and repeated in the documentary, I Am Not Your Negro, there is this terror in the white mind that somehow says that a black person is this scary figure. And this is something that is completely concocted by white persons. And I don't know why, but it is. And as James Baldwin suggested in that documentary, that is something that the people who do this, the white people who do this, are going to have to figure out why they have created this terror in their own minds about people who have not done anything to them. And that is something that they have to look at. And when Annette Gordon Reed, who, again, is an author and professor, who wrote the book On Juneteenth, which is available now, and the subtitle of it, Jim Crow and Violence Against the Black Community, when she's talking about all this violence, this is what is happening. This is happening on June 19th, 1865, and after it. So when I say that we are not really free yet as black people, I'm speaking from historical facts. And I'm speaking from the historical present. Dante Wright, George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, Rekia Boyd, Tatiana Jefferson. I mean, I'm speaking from present history. I'm speaking from Christian Cooper bird watching in Central Park in 2020. Black man bird watching in Central Park, and he has the police called on him, and this particular white woman, who also shares the last name that he has, is calling the police and lying and saying, oh, he's threatening me. This terror that exists in the minds of a great many white people, I don't know what that is for them. It's obviously racist, but there's no but. I'm just saying, and they have to investigate. The people who do this have to understand or try to reconcile or ask themselves why it is that they need to do this. Because it's costing a lot of black people their lives. And Annette Gordon Reed writes about a lot of this and a lot of this violence that happened after we were pronounced freed by this order from Gordon Granger in Texas, where a lot of black folk who didn't know that they had actually been free, according to the Emancipation Proclamation, for 2.5 years. I mean, 1863 was when this Emancipation Proclamation had been issued, and black people in Texas had that kept from them for 2.5 years. Is there going to be any kind of reparations for the descendants of those ancestors? And what does that look like? So even this is why it's really important, dear listener, to think about this history in this way. And as I said before, people can celebrate, but we've got to commemorate and we've got to remember and we've got to educate people. And that's the key, because there are narratives flying all around now saying, oh, it was the end of slavery. And not exactly. I mean, yes. I mean, very obviously, there it was very clear from the General Order Number 3 that Gordon Granger, the major in the Union Army, pronounced and set forth. And that was very clear. Yes, they were freed. No question about it. Black people in Texas, in Galveston, and in the state were pronounced free. And they were freed. But as I say, there was still enslavement going on in various parts of the country. And as Annette Gordon Reed outlined in that clip that you heard, and in her book in detail on Juneteenth, a must read, there was tremendous acts of violence against black people. And this is before we really got to Reconstruction. Reconstruction was what, about a 7 or 8 year duration? It ended roughly, 1876, 1877? I think around 1876, because you had the Hayes-Tilden Compromise, which dealt with the ramifications of an extremely close election in the presidency by dumping on black people and re-enslaving them, basically. We've got to have Confederate troops be here. You've got to take you've got to take your federal troops out of the South. That was part of the Hayes-Tilden Compromise. And so in order for, I believe it was Rutherford B. Hayes to be in power, there was this compromise that was made with Samuel J. Tilden. And if I remember correctly, and I'm doing this off of memory, and I should be more specific, but as I remember correctly, one of the things the compromise was to remove federal troops from the South after the end of the Civil War, right? Oh, well, if you take power, you've got to release these troops. And the Democrat at the time agreed to that. I think that was that Tilden? I don't want to say which one it was. But the Democrats wanted that. You've got to get these troops, because you remember, at that time in the 1800s, the Democrats were the party of enslavement, of the party of enslaving black people. And so this is what the Democrats wanted as part of what I think it was Tilden wanted as part of the compromise. And Hayes said, okay. And that's what happened. And then with the removal of federal troops, what you had is essentially a new kind of enslavement. And you had more violence against black people. So that whole period of time in the 1870s, and even before that, there was violence. And once 1876 came around and that compromise was struck and agreed to, oh my goodness, all hell broke loose. That was the end of Reconstruction in 1876/1877. And bang, all this violence again. So all of the things that black people were able to thrive upon and succeed in over that short 6 or 7 or 8 year period had been destroyed within a few months and years after that. And that culminated in things like the race massacre in Tulsa in 1921. And it culminated in things like, well, it wasn't even culminated, it was a continuation. It continued to 1923 with Rosewood, Florida, and all of these massacres in between that I've not even mentioned or got to in this episode. I have mentioned them in the past, but I've not delved into them. And these were state sanctioned. So you had all of this institutionalized violence against black people after Juneteenth. So, like I say, we're celebrating, and I think it's important to do that, but I think it's even more important to educate people. We must do that because there's a whole contextual reality that comes around and beyond that date. And like I say, yes, it marked the end of enslavement to a degree, but please, these narratives flying around that tell you, oh, that was the end of slavery in the U.S., not true, not true. because, as I said earlier, the ratification of the 13th Amendment in December of that year, some 6 months later in 1865, at the end of the year, began to effectuate the freedoms in a large number of places. However, even after that, there were still parts of the country where enslavement of black people was going on. And you had white people still enslaving people after 1865 in this country. So let's not gloss over that. And you're not going to hear a lot of that, I think, in the corporate mainstream news media that you may listen to or watch. I hope they do talk about that. But you need to be reading, you really need to be reading Annette Gordon Reed's book on Juneteenth. Because this is such an important, I tell you, this is a very sacred and important day, a solemn day, a day to commemorate for me more than celebrate. I mean, I will be paying homage to the ancestors. I mean, I think on a day like today, June 19th, 2021, flashing back to June 19th, 1865, it's a day to celebrate the ancestors, to celebrate their courage and their love and their wisdom and their bravery and their spirit. That's how I would celebrate at all on Juneteenth, on this very sacred and holy day, as far as I'm concerned. But I think that's as far as the celebration would go for me. The thing that I do, and what more people should do, and people are doing this as well, it's not just me, I'm simply saying that a great many more people in the world should also be educating and must educate people properly on what Juneteenth is and what it means, and not isolated only as one day. This is a day that is extremely important and extremely significant, and there was continuing fallout from the freedom of black people by white people. There was a continuing backlash. And if you think about it, dear listener, this is the frame that has always happened in the United States. When black folk get a little advancement, a little bit of an advancement, and a little bit of progress, you've got the white backlash coming back to confront it. This has been going on back and forth, seesawing back and forth, forever in this country. And that's the context that I want you to really take away and think about here on this particular day and every day. I do not want those who listen to this particular episode to go away thinking, oh, Juneteenth, hurrah, and not think about the ramifications tied to it and what happened after it. Because there have always been a sizable group of white people in the country who have resisted black progress, who have resisted blackness, who have been an enemy to black people, and who have actively been violent against us. So this cannot be taken as a day in a vacuum. It's not. And I think this day is extremely important. I'm very pleased that it is a holiday and it's federally recognized. I also want to say that we are adding to that, right? We have to continue to push for these other things too. We've done June 19th as Juneteenth, which has been a fight forever. That's been going, we've been trying to get this holiday forever. I also want people to really take into account that this white backlash, violence that was coming in response to every time we as black people get some kind of freedom and progress for ourselves, there are a bunch of white people in this corner, and that corner who fight against it. Oh, we're going to burn down your town. And they use the excuse of, oh, a black man attacked a white woman, which never happened. But the fact that you would introduce that, see, you're just not honest enough to say The people who say this, they're not honest enough to say, well, we just hate you and we just want to burn down what you've got. Because we know that you are really good and we know that you are good people and we know deep down that you are really smart and intelligent and creative and you have all this beautiful, wondrous history from centuries back on the continent and you continue to invent things in spite of being oppressed by us. And we just hate you for it. And we are racist, and so we're going to burn your town down, and we're going to kill you. Because we've not done one-tenth of what you've done. And everything we've got is because of you, and because we've had to enslave you to get it. They're not going to be honest enough to lay it out like that. They're going to put out their own myth and their own racist myth. Oh, it was a black guy that attacked a white woman. You see the dishonesty there? Do you hear that? How dishonest that is? But that is exactly how the history gets retold, that some black person committed some infraction against a white person, therefore we have to attack you. So they're trying to re-mythologize their own violence and re-justify it and always plant the seed of, well, a black man attacked, because their movies, as I said before, spent all this time indoctrinating all of us. Black, white, Asian, brown, every native, everybody with the images of the black man as a savage. And then in the cartoons and the TV shows, this is a whole country's cultural mythology and their racist cultural mythology. This is the whole country. And while that demonization was going on, you had actual violence by white people against black people. And not just in the South, everywhere. Birth of a Nation in 1915 also did this. Recruitments in the Klan went up. From 1915 to 1940, there was millions of people enrolled in the Klan, between 5 and 6 million people. And Klan membership was at its height in the years after World War II, or in the years leading up to World War II. I mean, you've got to put this history together. World War II was being fought in 1916, 1917. And in 1921, you had this violence against black people by white people. And this continued on. And this push and pull continued. Black senators, oh, we can't have them. You know, redistricting, Jim Crow, GI Bill that excluded black people. The segregation of the military up until 1947 with Truman signing in into, I think, an executive order that that desegregated the military in the country. And you have black people fighting and dying. And, you know, the push and pull, the push and pull. Then the fight back against that. Then Nixon comes along. Oh, law and order, you know. And then this continues on in the 80s. And Lee Atwater and what he had to say about demonizing black folk. This continues. This is what I'm telling you, dear listener. And you're fully aware of a lot of this. Or maybe you may not be. And it's not to talk to you as if you are a three-year-old. It is to illustrate the very real history and the push and pull. Black folk get some progress and there are white folk who say, we don't want that. And it's not only the South, it's all over the country. Sundown towns, all over the country. Here in California, they were lynching people less than 30 miles from here in San Francisco. And I dare say they were most likely lynching people here in San Francisco too. And now what we got, less than 6% of the population of San Francisco, California is black. And the push and the pull, the 1950s, the gentrification, the pushing out of black people from San Francisco. I played you portions of the Take This Hammer documentary of 1964 with James Baldwin visiting San Francisco in 1963 and speaking to the black people there. Talking then about how they didn't have jobs, how they were getting squeezed out of jobs, and if they had jobs, they paid next to nothing. This is 1963. That's almost 100 years after Juneteenth, 1865. Then, you talk about the backlash again. Oh, they voted for a black guy for president. Ooh, now the Supreme Court says, no, no problems with voting. So this is the thing. This is the thing I think that people have to understand. There's always this push and pull. We push forward and they push back. Push and pull. Pull us back. Right? This has been the cadence of the United States of America. When there's black progress, then there's white pushback. And it's violent pushback. And that's the way the history of the country cycles. And if you study the history of the country, you will understand that that is how it's calibrated. And again, a more recent example of this is what happened with the civil, with the human rights, the Voting Rights Act in 1965, which was exactly 100 years after Juneteenth. So you had all these protections because prior to that, you had 1964, June 21st, and we are almost on that, Anna, there's a commemorative date of June 21st, 1964, where what you had were one of, and this is amongst other violent episodes, you had two white civil rights workers who were trying to register people to vote, along with one black civil rights worker who was trying to register people to vote down in Mississippi. Andrew Goodman, Michael Schwerner, and James Cheney. And they were doing this in 1964 in Mississippi, and they were murdered in Philadelphia, Mississippi on June 21st, 1964. And there were other black people and some white people, I should add, who were murdered as well, trying to get black folk to vote, trying to register them to vote. That was in 64 and 63. You had the Freedom Rides in the early 60s, I think 1961, 62, and so on and so forth. So this was going on 100 years after Juneteenth. These constant attempts by white people in the power structure and white citizenry in a lot of these places in the country to trample black people's advancement, to trample their progress. And this is after enslavement. See, this is the thing. This is why when I think we are celebrating a day like today, we should be celebrating the courage of our ancestors who fought. Because we were the ones who had to do this. And there were abolitionists out there who fought. There was Harriet Tubman out there who fought and freed people in the Underground Railroad. Barry Jenkins has done a film on this too, which you should watch. And Harriet Tubman, there should be, if we really cared about our history in the United States, we would have monuments of Harriet Tubman all over the country. We wouldn't be having debates about her being on money. She was not a capitalist. She was anti-capitalist. Harriet Tubman did not want to be anywhere near money. So that's another thing that we need to really re-educate people on, is that Harriet Tubman was absolutely an anti-capitalist. And we're all talking about her being on bills. We wanted to be on a bill, a $20 bill. And she didn't want to be anywhere near a $20 bill. She freed black folk who were enslaved. And she made countless trips. She was a strategist in the military. She assisted the U.S. military. She planned and strategized battle plans. See, this is the history. And people turn their nose up at that. You know, you walk the street with a Harriet Tubman jersey and you see people looking at you, giving you dirty looks. Why? It's your history that you're staring nastily. It's your history too. But that's the thing. We don't want to talk about it. Why? It's actually history that shows that the country is moving forward because we've got heroines, heroes like Harriet Tubman, and you want to stick your nose up at that? Really? It's part of your history. But that's the problem, right? So all of these things are connective tissue. And you can't leave this stuff out, which is why, again, I really do recommend that you get this book by Annette Gordon Reed. But what I want to say is that the actual pushback after 1965 was all of this, all these kinds of gerrymandering of districts. So, oh, And it was happening before 65, but it was happening even more so after. Oh, they got the Voting Rights Act and LBJ signed it, Dr. King, and the whole movement fought for it. Oh, now we're going to redraw the districts. So we're going to make it harder for them to vote. I mean, this is what they do. Oh, you got a black president? Oh, we're going to have a Supreme Court decision called Shelby versus Holder that says that we can scrap the Section 4 federal pre-clearance provision so that all of these states, particularly in the South, but everywhere, don't have to consult the federal government for permission. See, there's always this pushback against our progress. And it's institutional, which is also a form of violence. That Supreme Court decision, to me, is violent. Now, it's not physically violent where people are losing their lives or being lynched, but it is violent in a way that it does so much damage to us. So now, you've got all these laws all over the country in 2021 and beyond that say that you can't do this, you can't do that, you can only vote during a certain time, you can't take a day off from work, you can't pass out a slice of pizza even though you've been on a line and you're starving and you've been waiting on a voting line for about 12 hours. You can't pass out bottled water because you might go to jail for that. That's a fascist country. You can't pass out a bottle of water while you're waiting on a friggin' voting line. And you shouldn't be waiting on a line for more than 20 minutes, let alone freaking 10, 12, 15, 16 hours. But that's what you've got. And it's happening in black and brown neighborhoods and poor white neighborhoods. Overwhelmingly black neighborhoods. And in college towns where you've got white voters who are college educated or who are in school in college, and their vote suppressing them too. So this is, again, this is about when we make progress in this country, you've got the power structure and you've got white people in the power structure and you've got black folk apologizing for that power structure who want to push back on you, who are pushing back on you, and the Supreme Court pushing back on you. Oh, well, you had a black man in the White House for 2 terms. So there's no barrier to voting here. This is what Chief Justice John Roberts said in that opinion. And we are coming up on the 8-year mark of that decision. One of the worst Supreme Court decisions that we've ever had in this country, along with Plessy v. Ferguson, Dred Scott v. Sanford, Citizens United, and all these other decisions that were absolutely wretched, Bush v. Gore. I mean, I can go down the line of all of these decisions that have committed a grave injustice to this country and have been designed as a slap in the face to black folk. I mean, this is why this day is so important for so many reasons. And it's a continuum of what goes on in this country, how when black people make progress, there is white backlash and violent backlash. And literally so. I mean, you see what's been happening. You see what's gone on. You see all of these killings. You see these police out of control. They've been like that for 400 blooming years. I mean, this is what happens. And this is the reality that most people in the country are not willing to look at. Some people are, but the vast majority don't care. And that's the thing. It's not even that they're not willing to look at it. They just don't care to look at it. And I think that's the thing. Oh, that happened years ago, so who cares? Well, wait, as I keep saying, when you had something happen to you years ago, you're not saying who cares. You had something traumatic happen to you when you were 7, 8, 9 years old, 20 years old, 10 years old, but you're not saying who cares. So why would you say that to us? Doesn't matter how long ago something happened. It happened. And you can't just blow that off and go, well, that happened so long ago. Oh, you know, I got attacked so long ago. Could you imagine the absurdity of someone saying that? But who cares? I don't care. It happened a long time ago. Now, what idiot is going to get up and say that about themselves? So then why are you saying that about us? Unless you don't care. Unless you don't want to hear it. And that's what it is. And so that's why Juneteenth is extremely important. And the connective tissue to it is because the backlash from the power structure, from white people in that structure, from a lot of white citizenry around the country is palpable and intense. So that's why you have that backlash. And now you got all these states passing voter suppression laws. Oh, you got, oh, 2020, you vote for Joe Biden and that black woman. Oh, we've got to now come up with, oh, you won Georgia. Oh, you won Arizona. We've got to now come up with a way to stop you. See, instead of being an American who is proud, right? Oh, I'm proud. Let everybody vote. No, you, and I'm talking to the people who do this in Georgia, in Arizona, in Wisconsin, in all of these states. You now want to throw out voter suppression laws. You will throw in voter suppression. Oh, we're going to stop you from... So you don't want progress. You just want you is what you want. And you want power. And this is your way of doing it, right? You want to suppress everybody else's votes and access to it. Oh, we've got to audit your vote. We've got to do a fraud it. Oh, we've got to suspend the certification. Oh, we've got to have a violent terroristic riot. It's not a riot, a violent terroristic attack on January the 6th, 2021. Oh, we don't want to certify. Oh, you know what we're going to do? We're going to pass these voter suppression laws. You know what we're going to do? We're going to have the last idiot in the White House making phone calls to, oh, the Georgia Secretary of State. We're going to have Lindsey Graham, the Senator of South Carolina. And what the hell is he doing? Making a call to the Georgia Secretary of State. Oh, look at these votes. We've got to look at these. Oh, we're going to make challenges. And we're only going to make them on the black counties. Oh, Detroit, Philadelphia, Milwaukee, Atlanta. What do those cities have in common? Oh, yeah. Yeah, they're mostly black. I mean, hello. So this is what I'm talking about, dear listener. And I really thank you for your patience and understanding as you listen to this. Because it's a lot of information, but it's really important information. Because it's information that you're not going to get put in the context that I have just put it in for you. There's always this backlash when we make progress, which means that we've got to keep fighting, which means that we've got to keep voting, which means that we've got to keep educating. Those are the mission pieces for you and anyone else listening. Celebrating is fine if you're celebrating the triumph of the spirit of the ancestors who paved the way for us to be here now against all of these violent odds and to thrive as well. And we're still having the clamps put on us. Still. So let's not get happy that now it's over. We've done this. No, this is why we have to keep going. This is what happens. You do not surrender, even when you've picked up a victory here and there. Because, as I say, the devil works overtime hours, baby. And you have to keep working. Because let me tell you something. 2022 is already happening now. And these Republicans are passing, I just said it a million times here. They are passing all these voter suppression laws all over the country. They are already determining the outcome of 2022 right here, right now in 2021. And if we're going to allow that to happen, then all we have to do is just sit back here and do nothing right now. But if we want to stop that, and if we want to override that, then what we have to do is plan and strategize now. Get in touch. Get involved. Call these local politicians. Call your state elected officials. Call the governors. Call the senator. Call the House members that you have. Please do this. This is where the point I really want to get to is. Because we're going to have the push and the pull, the progress, and then the attack on the progress for all of our lives and beyond. But if we don't stand up and we don't fight back and we don't vote and we don't protest and we don't donate and we don't volunteer and we don't educate, you're going to be winding up like Nazi Germany. And none of us wants to go there. None of us listening to this wants to go there. Listen, we know that there are people in this country who actively do want to go there because they've been showing us that with the kinds of banners that they hold up. But we as a generation and the subsequent generations to follow who want progress, who really do want some justice and not this just us, but actual justice for black folk and brown folk and Asian folk as well, native folk, then we've got to keep doing what we're doing. We've got to keep voting. You've got to keep educating. You've got to vote in every election. You've got to know who your local politicians are. You've got to know who the judges are. You've got to know who your school board member is. You've got to know about the education system in your city because funds get allocated to it. You've got to know that if you've got children especially. You've got to know who's making these decisions about education in your neighborhood. You've got to know what this is. You've got to get a grip on these meetings. They're public meetings that you get invited to, that you can go to. If you've got the time, if you know someone that does, sitting on these meetings, the board of supervisors here in San Francisco, for example, they have meetings. Some of them are open to the public. Many of them are open to the public. I think all of them are. There may be some closed sessions, but most of these, if not all, are open to the public. And it's really easy to get in touch with who your local board of supervisors are. Wherever you are in the country, you can find out who these people are. And they may be called different things in your city. They may be called township representatives. They may be called, you know, council persons. I know in New York, they're called the city council. There are a million different avenues that if you really do want to get involved and you really want to change some of the things that are happening, then you can do it. You want to know about who your DA is? Heck, if you go not far from here, there are people who know who their DA is and they're not particularly happy with them. You got people with Recall Chaser Boudin organizations. They've made a move because they don't like him. Now, listen, I may agree or disagree, and I disagree for the record with recalling Chaser Boudin. It's a waste of money and a waste of time. And there are a lot of other factors going on that Chaser Boudin has nothing to do with, number one, here in San Francisco, and that pre-existed him. See, this is the thing that people start to punk out on, is that recalling a person ain't going to be the thing that fixes this. And the people who do this kind of nonsense know that. Because these problems have pre-existed. People like Chaser Boudin, people like Gavin Newsom, like London Breed, these conditions have pre-existed them. It is not about one person. And see, that's why I'm against this recall, by the way, as I branch off a little bit here. I'm against this recall of Gavin Newsom because it's a waste of money and it's a waste of time. And that is not the issue. It's about a system. And the system is the issue. And these people know that. They just want power. The people who are asking for this recall are doing this on the behalf of people who want power. It's a power grab. It's an excuse to try to dull what the guy's doing. And he's doing some good things. There are other things I've got issues with him on, like everybody. You shouldn't be in lockstep with your politician. You should be wanting them to be better. But this is all part of the continuum from Juneteenth. And we cannot just be witnesses to history. We've got to be active participants in it. And the history is the present. It is the past, but it's the continuum. It's the present. And just because it happened in the past doesn't mean it's past. It's what William Faulkner once said. What happened to you at 5 years old, whether it was traumatic or not, but what happened to you at 8 years old, at 10, at 22, at 32? That's history if you're older than 32. That's history, but it happened to you. And if it's traumatic, it's never gone away from you. And if it's joyous, it's never gone away from you either. So why would you be casting that on a whole group of people, an entire race of people? Oh, well, it happened in 1865, so... What? I mean, you don't think that the descendants of black folk who were enslaved, you don't think they feel that? And then the society replicates it. Look at the society. The society reinforces all of it because it's in the society. It's built on black backs. Why would people be so absurdly saying things like, oh, it happened so long ago, when the whole blooming society is a reflection of that enslavement? Are you kidding? All the discrimination that goes on, the voter suppression that goes on. and everything else, the police running amok? Really? Oh, well, it happened to her. But what's happening now? But again, this is why I'm saying, and again, I know I've taken a lot of time on this, but it's really important, dear listener. It's really important. We have to be better. It's not about making anything great. It's about being better. You don't want to talk about greatness when you're not improving yourself, because greatness implies you've got nothing else to do. And we've got a lot to do. We've got a lot of work to do. And on this precious day, Juneteenth, you're going to get people scowling at you. You're going to get backlash. You're going to get people growling at you. Why you got that holiday? You have July 4th in 2 weeks. No, you know, you have a right to July 4th. But remember that on July 4th, there was so many people who were in chains, black folk, and people who couldn't vote, nearly all of us. And there was only one group of people on July 4th, 1776, who could vote. White, rich, property owners, men. And that was it. So you have to ask yourself, when you're celebrating anything, what are you celebrating? And that includes Juneteenth. Make sure you understand what it is you are celebrating when you celebrate today. Make sure that you are clear on that. But even more so, make sure that you educate someone on this day and educate them on the historic importance of this day and educate them on the context and the aftermath of this day, because that is a legacy that lasts a lifetime. Education is the key. Pass on the knowledge. Get people to read books, like On Juneteenth by Annette Gordon Reed, who is also on Twitter. Juneteenth. I pay homage and respect to the ancestors who paved the way for a brighter day for black people everywhere across these United States. The struggle continues, and we must keep voting. We must keep educating, and we must keep advocating and put pressure on the politicians who represent these districts. We have the power, and never forget that, and never forget to use your power at every election and plan ahead and strategize ahead, because that's how we win. May you have a blessed Juneteenth. Thank you very much for listening to this edition of The Politocrat. I'm Omar Moore. As promised, the announcement of the winner of the Juneteenth book giveaway here at the Politocrat Daily Podcast, and the winner of the book Ebony and Ivy by Craig Stephen Wilder is at OTJHERS. Congratulations to you. You are the winner of the book Ebony and Ivy by Craig Stephen Wilder, and the book will be on its way to you. So congratulations and thank you to everyone who participated in the random drawing of the name. One name only comes out of the hat, and it was the name of OTJHERS on Twitter. Congratulations once again, and thank you to everyone who participated.